And good morning. You're listening to Raven Radio, The Garden Show. It's Friday morning, just after 9:30. I'm Molly Kabler, and I'm delighted to say that I have in the studio with me gardener extraordinaire Florence Welsh. Good morning, and thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, you're welcome. All these compliments, they're great. I love these adjectives you're coming up with.
Well, I think they're really true. Florence and I have known one another for many a year, and Florence is, in some circles, needs no introduction, but I know there are people who don't know you and don't realize the wealth of knowledge that you've built around gardening in Sitka in our climate. And the resources that you've shared over the years, I had talked with somebody recently who said, well, we just used the Florence technique. And I thought, okay, I knew exactly what they meant on the Florence technique. I'm sure others don't. But yeah, tell us just a little bit about getting started gardening in Sitka and, you know, what the Florence technique is, if you don't mind.
Okay. Well, gardening is definitely challenging here. You know, we'll talk about that. But I had just dabbled in gardening earlier in my life. I've always been real attracted to nature and more wild harvesting kinds of things in my early years. But when I came here, I had just left New Jersey, the Garden State, where for a summer I had worked in a greenhouse, a nursery type greenhouse, a commercial place. So I learned a lot about that summer. It was kind of like a in between teaching jobs kind of a situation. And it was really valuable, but I hadn't thought much about gardening until I came here and worked in the Pioneers Home with a woman named Mary Richards at the time, Mary Sarvella. And she gardened in Jamestown, well, in Blueberry Lane. You know, it's as you're heading out towards the mill down on the beach. And she shared a lot of information with me about her gardening and brought me to her home quite a bit. And I was real attracted to it and did a little bit of gardening then and met Al Richter, who also, you know, he has a little windmill house. He's passed away now, they both have, but he had gardens and shared information with me and showed me around. And then once I had children, then I was really interested in gardening just so that I could grow my own food and know where it came from and that it was basically organic and that sort of thing. And being pretty broke, I was thinking about how I could fertilize the gardens and knew that some people had mentioned using seaweed, especially after the herring spawn, which was really prolific and, you know, for almost the whole time I've lived here. And so, and that's been, I guess I've gardened about 40 years. And so that's how it all started. But, you know, over the years, I think you come to realize that some years it's really worth the immense amount of work that goes into serious gardening here. And it really has a lot to do with a variety of things. And I'm thinking this might not be one of the years that it's going to be worth all that effort. And that's because of the things that are involved, which when you think about gardening here, the challenges are the fact that almost everywhere the soil is poor and we have bad weather. There's weeds and there's slugs. Those are the four big challenges that I find in gardening, which I can control three of the four. The one I can't control necessarily is the weather. And so what I think a lot of people think is, well, then just garden in a greenhouse. And greenhouses are really great for a lot of things in gardening here, but it's not the answer to large-scale gardening. I mean, you'd have to have a huge greenhouse. And I know sometimes I'd dream at night of like a giant kind of Jetsons kind of umbrella that I could just open up over the whole property and keep that rain off.
Yeah, we need one of those domes that opens and closes, yeah. Right? Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
It would be, but you know, the other problem is as soon as you get everything covered, then your job is watering.
Yeah.
And that's the difference here. You know, somebody new to gardening will be like, how much do you water? And I'm like, well, I don't water.
Right.
You know, I mean, starts brand new. Mm-hmm. Anything that needs water when there's like 2 weeks of dry, you know. But normally watering isn't what we do, and it's such a big part of either covered space gardening or gardening somewhere else.
And I do have a greenhouse that's sizable and a covered garden that's sizable. And so it is a trade-off because, you know, even with this weather now with constant rain, I spend a lot of time watering the covered garden and the greenhouse. So, yeah, you know, there's always something to do no matter what your approach is. But a lot of it has to do with weeding and slug patrol and those kinds of things.
Yeah. It's interesting how I think Sitka and Southeast gardeners get to the place where the most precious thing is their soil.
Mm-hmm. It is.
You know? I mean, whatever tools, whatever, fine, but you know, it's really your soil.
It is. And you know, if you work at it over the years, if you amend them and, you know, really work hard at getting the right things in that you're eager to include. You know, there's lots of different approaches to it. Ours was every spring hauling in lots of that seaweed and tilling it into our garden beds and kind of doing a mulch thing around anything that was perennial, which really had a double benefit because it would fertilize around the fruit trees and perennial flowers and things. But it also held back the slugs quite a bit because it was difficult for the eggs to hatch and work up through that if we put a good layer on. So between those two efforts, it went really well. And then the root maggot fly is where you would run into a lot of problems and aphids with vegetables depending on the time of the season. And the floating row covers was just a miracle because when I first started gardening, I'd never heard of them, and I don't even know if they were even available, but I started reading a lot of gardening magazines in the library, and I think it was in organic gardening when they started advertising it, and it was the brand Remay, but there's lots of different brands of the floating row cover now. It's like a lightweight white spun kind of polyester cloth that you've probably seen in gardens around town, and I use it without fail on most all of my gardens outside of flowers and fruit trees. I don't use it on them very often. But every other garden, I at least used to start out with that, and it would keep the root maggot flies from landing, planting their eggs right at the base of the stem, and then the maggots that would grow from the eggs would chew through your vegetable. And just when it was starting to look really good, you'd get a sunny day, and timber, you know, whatever it was, broccoli or whatever, it would just look terrible and tip over and die because the stem was chewed through. But I also noticed that it was very effective later in the summer to keep the aphids off of lettuce and other bugs, but mostly the aphids. Nowadays, I think since it's warmed up, I'm thinking is why I'm seeing a lot of little worms and flies and things that are unfamiliar as far as years ago, but are showing up more so now, and it would keep them off as well.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. It seems like we have warmer times. Not warm and sunny. That's not necessarily what we're talking about. We're just like overall climate warming type.
Right.
And it will be interesting to see what we can grow or that have been on the edge.
Yeah.
I'm very curious about some of the fruit trees. So which fruit trees? You've grown apples for years,
right.
I know.
Yeah.
Do you grow other fruits?
Well, I have had incredibly good success with the apples, but that I think was also advice from people in Southeast. I had been in touch years ago with a guy in Ketchikan who recommended Williams Pride apples and Pristine and a couple of others, but those two were the outstanding because you need the two to cross-pollinate two different types of apples. And oh my gosh, you know, I do have nice soil pretty much throughout the property, and what I've done without even realizing it a lot of times was plant the fruit tree at the base of a slightly slanting garden so the nutrients would run downhill to the roots of the fruit tree. And a couple of them I didn't do that, and they've done great. But I think just in general, our property has a lot of really good soil. And oh my gosh, hundreds and hundreds of apples, I mean, if not thousands, as they've grown larger. It's just been incredible. And usually, no problems. When we've had those really cold, wet falls, and sometimes the cold, wet spring, the spring will impact the blossoms. You know, I see quite a few brown blossoms on my fruit trees right now. And the pollinators, I think, are imposed upon. You know, they're just not going to jump in and do it like they would if it was dry and clear, you know. So that affects it. And then I think if you have really bad weather later in the summer, meaning heavy rain, perpetual rain, it will slow down the ripening process. But I think you still can do really well with the varieties that people have had success with. Those are the apples I was successful with. And I'm so excited about pears, which I had planted quite a few varieties 8 years ago now. And just last summer, me thinking I would never see pears, I did. And it was so exciting because they're absolutely delicious and looked beautiful and ripened up really nicely. And it wasn't the greatest summer last year, so I was thrilled, you know, and I look forward to seeing. I had three that actually produced so far, and there's four more varieties that I have carefully watching. So excited.
That's very exciting. And it so is. I think it sounds like what people can take away, one is that you have to be patient if you're going to do pears.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it seems like you'll get a few apples pretty quickly if you've got a decent size start to your tree. Mm-hmm. You know, you might not have like the apples and apples, but you might at least have an apple to know that it's going to happen.
Right.
But it sounds like with pears, you're going to have to be patient.
Well, and this one variety called Shapova that came from Europe years ago and ended up in the United States, I actually purchased three of those bare root trees from three different companies. And I don't know why I did that. I just was kind of, you know, there was no real reason why I got it from three companies. But it's fascinating because one was a dwarf, and then the other two are really tall, and they're kind of pyramid shaped, so they're real easy to care for. You don't really need to prune. And most of the time, people have found that it takes about 15 years for those to produce fruit. So I was expecting to never see them in my lifetime. But last year, I had fruit on one of the three, quite a few. And this year, the tree is covered with blossoms, and they don't need cross-pollinating, which is really fascinating. So the other two, not a single blossom yet.
Interesting.
I know. So I'm going to be curious to see what happens with
them. It's often so hard to know, like, what happened in translation in the commerce. And most of our fruit trees that we buy from commercial sources are all grafted.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, what graft did they use? I mean, you buy it as a Sharpova. Now, a lot of times they'll even tell you the graft.
Yeah.
I mean, a really, if you were really tracking on things, you should be able to know what the root stock is that's been grafted.
Yeah.
But sometimes we lose track of that information if we're not
careful. I try to write that down,
yeah,
you know, in a little notebook when I get them. But yeah, when I was first involved with gardening, I failed to do that quite often. So.
Well, it wasn't too long, though, that you had a nice booklet. I remember back in the day you had a booklet, and it was sort of pre-internet days. Early on, you've always been so gracious about sharing your information repeatedly. I mean, in conferences and presentations, and you've been on the garden show. And so that continues because you have quite an amazing blog posting that's online, and you keep that up and going. And I think it's a huge resource for folks.
Well, I really enjoy doing that because I think I explained to you earlier that often I'd run into people, and I am really excited to have any success with anything in the garden. So as I figured some things out, knowing that everyone's yard is slightly different and the way what's important to you and what you're trying to grow and all of that, I think individual differences are a terrific thing. And I just thought, well, here's what we did and what succeeded for us. And some of it is just, you know, elementary basic stuff that would help people get going here because it's so different in Sitka than gardening pretty much anywhere else on earth, I think, you know. I mean,
you know,
when you think of rainforest, you usually think of like South America in 100 degrees, and you know, here we are in a temperate rainforest, and I think it's really unique. And the fact that the volcano left the volcanic ash, so our soil is really acid and pretty empty, you know, of nutrients. But there's so much available. You know, I took the approach of using ocean materials and seaweeds and things because I was broke when I started gardening. But then it was kind of magical. And when I got some of the seaweed initially, one time I had just by chance scooped up a considerable amount of sand from one of the beaches I went to and just so happened to grow carrots in that patch. And what a combination. The drainage is so important. So I think it's really important to incorporate sand in the gardens as well. And we have commercial facilities here in town where if you need a lot of sand, you can purchase it at a reasonable price. And then, you know, there's sand pretty much everywhere else that you ever travel by boat, you know, in the woods and things. So if you just need it a little bit, I'm sure you can find where to gather it here and there. But when you need a lot, we have a really good resource commercially. So that's a huge issue, I think, that people need to understand, that with such moist ground, if you don't have good drainage, you're not going to see success. Things will pretty much want to go to seed right away.
Yeah, I think the other thing that happens with that, when you do build your soils appropriately for good drainage, which we need because of the level of rainfall we have, it also means we have a lot of leaching.
Uh-huh.
And what that means is that you know, beginning of the garden season, you've put all this great nutrient laden stuff in your garden, and by the next spring, if you haven't completely covered your garden, which you can't completely, you know, you've had both the crop that you grew diminishing nutrients, micronutrients in the soil, but also that leaching of the rain all
right.
season long. So for us in Southeast here in the rainforest, it's constant. We have to build that nutrition all the time.
Yeah. And it wasn't until I was well into it for quite a few years that it was like, use logic, Florence, and cover the garden with tarps and things through the winter. And that helps a lot, you know, I think as far as the leaching out. You're still going to have water running in the sides and stuff, but I think that helped quite a bit, you know. So I started doing that, and we just happened to have a lot of old tarps around for different jobs that we had done. My husband's work involved a lot of that. And I was so overwhelmed with weeds in between the gardens in some places that I utilized more of what my husband had for the work he was doing, because he was like a backhoe landscaper guy, rock wall building, and that all of those kinds of things that you can do with backhoes. And he had this felt-type cloth that you could use in construction that I would put down unlike the path in between gardens. And oh my gosh, it was such a big help. And my children were so happy because they were the weeders. I weeded too, but they had, that was an assignment throughout the summer. And so it really reduced the weeding. And we just flip it over every year and the roots are sticking up then. And, you know, just keep flip-flopping it. And it lasted for years and years. And that was a big help, too.
Nice.
So over the years, you just kind of figure out ways to make it not quite so overwhelming, the tedious chores.
Yeah. When you have a lot of space you're gardening, and I think you probably have almost one of the biggest amounts of space under cultivation, you know, especially in terms of growing food, Florence, than anybody. I've always described you as the person who probably more than anybody feeds their family with what you grow. I really like to stay away from making people feel badly about about it. And we've always joked, don't compare yourself to Florence. She has a husband with a backhoe. And so, you know, that's always been a good thing. But there's so many people that do garden and have learned things. And as you mentioned previously, everybody's site is different. Mm-hmm. I live in the Indian River Low neighborhood. Yeah. So, and I've got big trees around. So I, you know, my gardening is very different than your gardening.
Yeah.
It's very different than Kitty's gardening.
Right.
But You know, I'm not moving, neither is Kitty, and I can't imagine you moving either. So, you know, you just make peace with that,
right,
and you enjoy what you have and the process. And I've come to describe myself as someone who grows for tastes and nibbles, and, you know, and love it. Really appreciate that fresh carrot. There's nothing like it.
So. Well, I think we did make a mistake in that we had about 3/4 acre to develop, and I was just so gung-ho. It's like, let's just develop the whole thing. We terraced everything and tons of rock walls, and every space except where the house is sitting, we developed. And I have come to regret that because, you know, it was more than what we needed. So, you know, at the time it was fun to do things like barter and share and gifts, and I mean it was really fun. And with the vegetable gardens came the flower gardens, and oh my gosh, there's nothing more enjoyable than giving someone a bouquet of beautiful flowers that just are so surprising to have grown here in Sitka. You know, it's just over the years I have found flowers that are breathtaking and not that challenging for me to succeed with. And so it's been just such a fun thing, you know, whether it's weddings or, you know, losing someone or birthday, you know, I always seem to have the flowers throughout the season to share. And it's been great. And my kids have done that too. So it's just been so enjoyable. And lots of berries, you know, I discovered a friend had shared a strawberry with me that is like the most amazing ground cover, and we'll end up with as much as 10 gallons of strawberries at the end of the season besides all we ate all summer and gave away, and lots of raspberries because they want to come up everywhere once they get going. So it's just been really amazing at, you know, if the spaces that you don't want to garden, you can think of things where you could grow stuff that you could share readily and isn't a lot of work to take care of at the end of the season. That's the way to go. But I would not encourage anyone to try to just for a family, you know, utilize that much space for gardening. As you get older, it really becomes a challenge to successfully maintain it.
So a lot of your, you know, so much of your experience and sort of varieties and like each type of vegetable is all available. So let's talk just for a second about where people can find that specifically on the web.
Well, I put together a blog and it's called Sitkavores, like carnivores, you know, that word. So it's Sitkavores, all one word, .blogspot.com. But you could just write in Sitkavores on Google and it'll come up. And I was ready to give that up because a blog is, when you go to a blog, you'll see the last post is the way it works. And I couldn't figure out how to do an index. And then a lady wrote to me from Wales about something I was growing that she had seen on my blog. And she was this incredible gardener. The family had cattle and gardens that were just unbelievable. She has a blog. And she had an index on the side, but it was called Labels. It was like, I just didn't realize that when I put the label in, it would turn into an index alphabetically on the
side.
Nice. So if you go to my blog, you'll see on the right side of each page, at the beginning of the page, there'll be a long list of the topics, you know, whether it's flowers or vegetables. And I still have a lot of, probably 20 or 30 more topics I'd like to enter, but it's, you know, there's so much to do in this life that I'd love to have it all done, but I'm picking away at it.
Right. Well, gardening is always changing for us, what we care about, what we want to grow, what we prefer.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, what's one of the things that you're just either is new or you're just really enjoying right at the moment?
The pears, of course. I told you about that. I mean, I just go crazy over the pears and, you know, do like, if I could still do handsprings, I would. But I also, just the last couple of years, discovered a cabbage named Bobcat, that variety that the slugs avoid. It was so shocking because the last couple of years, it just was really rainy, you know, and the slugs manage, no matter how careful you are. I spread Sluggo, you know, regularly and do a lot of hand picking. And I'm real, I have that mission where I don't think anyone can ever eliminate slugs once they show up, because they won't show up for the first year or two of your gardening. Then they find you and it's like they rain down from heaven. But this particular one, there were other varieties around it that were just looked like doilies, you know, just so chewed up by the slugs, especially the lower outer leaves. And that bobcat had zero. So in my garden, at least, the slugs stayed away from bobcat. So it's worth a try in other gardens. I don't know exactly why that happened, but for 2 years in a row, that was the case.
And you grew it from seed, no doubt. Right, and do you remember where you got that bobcat seed?
Territorial.
Okay.
Yeah. A lot of the seeds I use are Territorial. I'll get stuff from other places too, but pretty much Territorial is my main source.
Yeah. Territorial focused their products on Northwest growing,
right.
Cooler seasons. I would say shorter seasons, but you know, in a way, we don't have that short of a season here, and the fall is what seems so variable. I mean, we can have a pretty sharp frost early in the fall, or what seems like early, or you know, sometimes it's November before we've really had that sharp frost, and so it can be hard to know, like, now do I cut back my fuchsias and put them away, or do I wait? And when I winter my fuchsias over, it takes them a while to get their blooms. It's not like the ones you buy in the greenhouse, you buy in commerce that have come right out of the greenhouse and they're fully in bloom. So anyway, you know, it can be interesting. But we do really have a long season, but it is a cool season.
Yeah. And that was the fascinating thing, is that everything that was considered cool weather crops, they really do great here. With, you know, the knowledge of using things like floating row covers. Oh my gosh, what a difference that made. I really wasn't going to garden as I was so disturbed by the loss before floating row covers came out, that it was like, I'm not going to waste my time on this, you know, because I wasn't getting my share. The slugs weren't, and the root maggot flies and all, they weren't being cooperative and doing a 50-50 even, you know. So
Mother Nature.
So the floating row cover was like a magical thing. It really was, especially for a place like this where so many of the coal crops, you know, the broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, Brussels sprouts, so many things. That's the way it goes. It's, you know, to root maggot flies and later on slugs.
I know the other thing for Alaskans is, we just have a couple minutes, but for Alaskans, we live such a seasonal life if we're tied to either land or harvest or the season of tourism and fishing. And so, you know, a lot of people, they don't have all summer to garden. They have to get it in and it has to tend itself and then they'll be back for it. And some of those, especially with a row cover, in particular, the ones like potatoes, you know, an easy one to plant early in the spring. And if you can just get them hilled up, and then, you know, they'll be waiting for you when
I
you
know,
come back from
so
fishing.
Exciting. I've even gone out to islands and piled up, put a seed potato down and piled seaweed up over it and go back in the fall. And there you go, potatoes. It's been fun, you know, up above the high tide line.
Really great. Well, I have one other question for you. So one of the things I remember as an amazing aha from a long time ago was Canterbury bells.
Oh,
so
gosh,
you were
yeah.
always famous for Canterbury bells, which is a campanula. Do you still grow them?
I do. And that was one of the ones where it's like they're so breathtaking in bouquets. Even still, for me, you know, you never know what color it will be and how many layers of bells inside of bells. And they're so spectacular. Yeah, I still grow them, as many as I can fit.
Nice. Well, Florence, I can't tell you how fast this has flown and how wonderful it's been to have you in to talk about gardening. I love that it's all about the share, and I would really encourage you, the listener, to go to Sitkavors. There's so much information there. I think you're going to want to go multiple times as you, you know, go on your own gardening journey. So thanks so much, Florence. Really appreciate it. We'll be back next week on The Garden Show. Not sure what we're going to talk about, but you know, we'll see what Mother Nature has in store for us and do our best. Thanks so much for listening this morning for The Garden Show. I'm Molly Kabler. This is KCAW in Sitka.